The World of Warcraft podcast, so you don't have to. This is the instance.
Hey everybody, Scott Johnson here, and a little something different today. We're actually doing a regular episode of the show on Sunday because we had to move some stuff around for schedules. But Garrett had this awesome idea since he has finished the recent book by Christy Golden, and so has Patrick, that he and Patrick would put their heads together and record a relatively short, about 30 minutes or so, episode of the show where they discuss that book and spoilers there within. So if you haven't read the book and you still plan to and you don't want to hear any of that, now would be the time to check out. But I'm actually really excited to hear this. And I haven't finished the book, so I couldn't be a guy in there. Why would I be? I'd just talk about nothing. So anyway, sit with me, won't you, and listen to Patrick and Garrett as they discuss what they learned in the most recent book about World of Warcraft from Christy Golden. Take it away, boys.
Everyone, I'm assuming that this is on the instance feed, which means it's odd to hear this voice leading anything, but I'm Garrett and I'm sitting here with Patrick Beja, and since the instance is happening off schedule this week, I sent you a poke, Patrick, because you and I started to get into a bit of a discussion about the new World of Warcraft novel Before the Storm on the last episode, and you had finished right. It, I hadn't, and we were also trying not to spoil the living hell out of the book.
So I guess now what we're going to be doing is you have finished it and we are going to spoil the hell out of it. So if you don't want to know what happens in the novel, which by the way has very little impact, I think, or direct impact, it's not it feels like the events that start the expansion aren't the direct result of what happens in the novel. So I don't think it is super spoilery for the expansion itself, but it is definitely spoilery for the general, well, for the book itself and for the general story of World of Warcraft. So spoiler talk starts now, right?
Yep, we're good to go.
All right.
Gloves are off.
So good to go.
Gloves are off. Kalia Manathil is raised from the light undead abomination we've never seen before.
Before we get to that, when we were talking about it last week, I was saying I was disappointed in the way Sylvanas was portrayed, I think is the best way of putting it. I think her motivations are a little bit unclear and a little bit difficult to relate to, most notably because the conflict that opposed the Horde and the Alliance at the beginning of Legion were very compelling in both camps, and this time it feels like you understand Anduin, but you don't understand Sylvanas. Do you concur now that you've finished the book, or do you have a different view?
I feel like I understand Sylvanas, but I still feel overall it's cookie cutter. What's the word I'm looking for? It's a little by the numbers, a little like shallow. There's not a lot of nuance there. Like Sylvanas is just dark, almost for the sake of being right. Dark.
Yeah, and I think that's what bothers me. Like, she's a banshee, fine, but it's like if Garrosh, the illegitimate child between Garrett and Garrosh, if Garrosh hadn't been the super dark, evil war chief of the Horde, I think I would have thought Sylvanas as an evil war chief would have been super interesting. But doing this a second time after Garrosh feels like too much. And also she's just, I mean, I understand she's a banshee, she's the dark lady, all of this, but she's really just evil. And it doesn't jive for some reason.
I'm more or less with you, and I'm a big Sylvanas fanboy, and like I don't want Sylvanas to be good. Like I want Sylvanas to be dark.
Right.
Like Sylvanas needs to have an edge, and like she needs to be a difficult character, especially for the Alliance to deal with, and that's certainly accomplished in this novel. But honestly, her greatest, I would say, crimes or actions in this novel are against her own people. It's not even against the Alliance, which I guess in that regard, it is more interesting. And that's where I almost found the nuance. I was like, oh man, by the end of this book, Sylvanas is just going to attack the Alliance. And they're going to have this black and white reason for the battle outside of Lordaeron. One of my biggest concerns, which was having an extremely dull reason for the battle of Lordaeron, have been more or less quelled.
You mean because she attacks the desolate council and not the Alliance citizens, so she's really just not giving Anduin an opportunity for, you know, or even a reason to start a war that he doesn't want to start.
More or less, yes. But I'm still concerned about, like, it seems like if the burning of Teldrassil happens after this, which we are assuming it does...
Well, yeah, it does.
She's just declaring war at that point.
Well, I guess we don't know what happens then and why the burning of Teldrassil happens. So I would suggest we stay on the book itself, because then, you know, we haven't seen the cinematics. No one knows why that happens. But for what happens in that book, I feel like Sylvanas is not even trying to unite the Horde or to, like, because as you said, we don't want her to be super nice Lady Sylvanas. All of a sudden she's Thrall 2.0, but it's not really interesting if she's just dark. And I feel like she's just dark. Like she goes to Orgrimmar and she hates everyone. Right. She doesn't want to work even with the trolls or the Taurens. Like she despises the Taurens. She despises the goblins, but she works well. Well, everyone despises the goblins, but
everyone, even Anduin is like goblin racist. Everyone is goblin racist in this book. It's absurd. Like Anduin, who is the biggest Boy Scout ever, which was like the other thing that kind of kept me from enjoying this book a little too much. Even he is just like, yeah, goblins, they're not the best of creatures to work on. I'm like, oh, come on, Anduin, you're supposed to be woke.
I have to say, it bothered me way less than Sylvanas's attitude, but Anduin is definitely super goody two shoes Boy Scout. Well, and I mean, you understand he's what, 18? So you understand he's still bathed in the ideals of his priesthood youth. But like his idea, I don't know if the whole idea that we're going to get people to meet with their undead relatives, I like that, but it kind of didn't sit well with me, because it's like, so no one has ever spoken to an undead? Like, they are everywhere. You quest with them. I understand you can't have everything fit together because the world is so wide and the lore is so wide, but that revolutionary idea of having Stormwind citizens go and speak to their undead, forsaken relatives and be like, oh my God, so they are not bloodthirsty monsters. Some of them have feelings. It's like, you didn't know? It's been like 15 years, dude. It feels a little bit like retconning something a little bit.
Oh, that's funny. That didn't really bother me at all, because
really,
it'd be one thing if like Anduin was having this discussion with heroes of the Alliance that are essentially surrogates of player characters. Because yes, we as heroes in the story, I'm saying, like, whether you play Alliance or Horde, for the sake of this discussion, assume you're playing Alliance. Yes, you've been out there and you've dealt with some undead, especially if you're a priest, that they're all over the Netherlight Temple. But a baker in Stormwind, I don't think he has ever had a reason to cross paths with a member of the Forsaken.
I guess a baker in Stormwind, but like Anduin himself realizes when he meets Archbishop, what's his face? He's like, oh,
Fowl, yeah.
But wait, he speaks normally, and he's like, you know, he really acts like he didn't know. And everyone in the high command of the Alliance is like, oh, they behave normally. I mean, anyway, it's a bit of retconning that I think is not super skillful, but
yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Again, I would defend it as saying that, like, we're dealing with general populace here. We're not necessarily dealing with soldiers.
No, but the command structure of Stormwind and the Alliance doesn't know, is what right. It feels like. Yeah. It's not what it feels like. He discovers that undead have feelings. I keep saying they have feelings. It's like, undeads have feelings too, or at least Forsaken. When he meets the Archbishop in the Netherlight Temple, you know, and he's stunned. So it's not just the Bakers, but yeah. Okay.
But it also has to do with who Foul is and his history with the founding of the Knights of the Silver Hand and all of that. Sure, like the importance of this, and that he really hasn't changed, that he's the same person as a Forsaken as he was as a priest in life.
I did like that they explained how they were sustaining the life of the undead, of the Forsaken, through, you know, like sewing on sinew and tissue and muscle and like different hands, and the fact that they are actually rotting. It's much more chilling than when you see the characters in the game. Of course, they're like half rotten, but in this way, you kind of understand what they are. And it does explain a little bit of the urgency for Sylvanas, because they've been undead for, I don't know, 10, 15 years, and they're starting to like literally rot and break. So she wants more people because her people are being destroyed. So it does explain a little bit of the urgency. I just wish she had been collaborating a little bit more with the Horde. It's more that, actually, the fact that she doesn't even like the Horde. She doesn't seem to like the Horde at all.
Yeah, that's kind of what bugs me too. Like, she has you can tell that there's respect there for the Tauren, but even then, like, I don't know, with the Tauren, it's almost a disagreement of worldview, where the, you know, because the Tauren are probably the most neutral of Horde races, right? Like, because they're so honorable and they are so in touch between their druids and their paladins with the life of the world, that they're just. They're not as like bloodthirsty as some of the, you know, more traditional Horde races like orcs and whatnot. I actually kind of enjoyed that flavor in the storytelling of Sylvanas just not being happy being in Orgrimmar, because I, as a Horde convert, I hate hanging out in Orgrimmar. Everything's made out of like dirt and sticks, and it drives me banana. Like, I would so much rather be in Undercity or Silvermoon, because I find the architecture so much more visually pleasing.
Right.
But yeah, so to me, I'm just like, yeah, Sylvanas gets it. The Horde.
Yeah, it's not just being unhappy to be in Orgrimmar. It's literally like you can feel the distaste and the stink in her nose when she's speaking to anyone who isn't a Forsaken from Undercity. Right. That's what bothers me. But
yeah, and I get that, and at the end of the day, yeah, I'm with you. Like, she's just unsympathetic. It is very difficult to see her side of the story, and I do see it. Like, I get it. I like the fact that she, again, going to the end, jumping back to the end of the book, you know, the fact that she kills her own people, you know, the members of the Desolate Council who she thinks is defecting. Like, I understand it. I understand why. I get the motivation. It's just that it seems like a little much.
I understand that she would kill them if she thinks they're defecting, because she's just that kind of dark lady. But I think it's also an excuse to get rid of that alternative power structure, which she feels is threatening her position and her authority.
Yes, so, I agree. And the book leaves that ambiguous. It's kind of up to us, the reader, to decide of like, well, did she really? Because she kills members that are running back to the wall. She kills members that are at the wall, at the Horde side of things, that actually listen to the retreats being sounded. Right. And to the point where Nathanos, which I don't know if that's a correct way to pronounce it or not. I've read it. I didn't listen to the audiobook, and I don't think I've ever heard Nathanos' name said out loud. But whatever the case, even him, who's like the creepiest dude I've seen in World of Warcraft, is like, oh, wow, that's a little much, Sylvanas.
Yeah, so maybe there will be some kind of redemption. I can't remember. Maybe it was you who was saying it. Maybe there's going to be some kind of redemption or unexpected arc for her during the expansion, which might make it worth it. But
I hope so.
Do want to... Oh, go ahead.
Because I really hope so, because you're right. Like, my biggest complaint is that, like, I'm of two minds. Like, I want Sylvanas to be dark. I think they're going a little too dark. It's a little, like, ham-fisted, like, Sylvanas is bad, Anduin's good. This is the setup for BFA. And it's like, no, this is World of Warcraft. It's supposed to be more nuanced. Both sides are supposed to be equally relatable and fallible. And I'm not seeing it. I'm like, where I was seeing it in the Horde was in the Desolate Council, was seeing the Forsaken portrayed as human, for lack of a better word. And we killed them. We had the leader of the Horde murder them in cold blood, or lack of blood, because they're already dead. But you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I do feel like the Desolate Council was a really interesting piece of the Undercity. I'm a little bit sad that they had to go, but maybe that's what they're trying to do. Maybe they're painting a very black and white picture, and they're going to introduce some nuance during the expansion. Maybe that's going to be a cool arc for those characters during, you know, that we're going to live through as player characters. So that's possible. But I do want to get to Kalia or Kalia. Kalia?
I've always said Kalia. Again, I've only ever read it in text.
It's Kalia. But before that, what did you think about the unlikely gnome and goblin couple side story?
Heartwarming and the shining spot of this book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. I thought it was very fun. Like, it was just, this was the quirkiness of World of Warcraft, like, given a, I thought, a very entertaining spotlight. Because if you had that removed from this book, this would be an extremely dark book. Like, and there's a quirkiness that's really exhibited the most by the small races of your gnomes originally, and then goblins when they were added as a player race. Even though before they were a player race, it was still around, you know, with engineering and whatnot, that I've always really liked. I've always liked the kind of weird, goofy, funny side of WoW, and the Warcraft, you know, universe. And I thought this was a pretty good job of kind of capturing that and kind of being a little heartwarming. Also, Chrissy Golden does romance really well. One of my favorite parts in this book that I wasn't expecting to care at all about is like the 10 pages we get of Caligos and Jaina meeting back up. And that's because I liked, I liked Tides of War so much. And Jaina has just fallen off the face of the planet in World of Warcraft. She, like, where the hell has she been? Like, Theramore's destroyed. It's this huge turning point for her character, and they have done nothing with her since then.
So I listened to the book. I listened to it on Audible, and I have to say I had forgotten about that Caligos Jaina moment, and I don't really think Chrissy Golden is super fantastic writer. It didn't come through at least in this book, but that passage, like, seriously brought, I was listening to it, I was like, oh yeah, Kalec, sure, whatever. And then she shows up, so, and I think by the end of it I was like, oh my god, he's holding her hands, and she gotta go away, like, I was misty, and it was really effective. So I will grant you, yeah, she does romance, or at least that part was really good.
Yeah, like, and it was something I'd kind of forgotten about, and again, it, like, surprised me that I was invested still, because now it suddenly Tides of War just came rushing back, and I just think that's a fantastic book. I still, and this, like, blows everyone's mind, I still have not read the Arthas book, which everyone, knowing what a fanboy I am, is like, A, you like Chrissy Golden, B, you're like one step away from getting an Arthas in a heart on your butt tattoo. How have you not read this? And it just when it came out, I was busy and just never got around to it. And now it just seems almost too late. But yeah. I love Tides of War. Like, of the Warcraft books I have read, that's my favorite one. And that one little passage, I'm like, crap, that's right, I am invested in this relationship. More of this, please.
I haven't read it. Maybe I should go and seek it out. I only started reading books, Warcraft books, with Illidan last year or 2 years ago, because I thought they did such a great job with the podcasts. You know, the, which one is it? when Gul'dan is super angry and he's like, "That was not me."
You know, it's like him descending into the tomb of Sargeras.
Exactly. And I thought it was great. Anyway, so I only read that one. I started reading the trial one. Which one was it?
Oh, War Crimes.
War Crimes. And I felt it was so copied from an actual current trial room, I felt like I was watching a legal show on ABC or something like that. You know, it felt a bit weird. But maybe I should go back and listen to War Crimes, not War Crimes, but Ties of War and maybe another one, because I kind of enjoyed the two that I've read now completely.
Tides of War is, I think, really great. It has such a good set piece, and I feel that they gave Golden more to play with.
Right.
Whereas this book, Before the Storm, it's like too little content spread out over too many pages.
It is. Yeah, it did feel like midway through I started thinking, wait, so that's the only thing they're gonna do? I felt like they were gonna do a lot more with the story and with the characters and like And it all centers around that plan from Anduin to have the you know, undead and alive meet. And it is a bit thin. I agree. I think Christy Golden was given very little to convey whatever she wanted to convey with.
It felt a lot to me like the modern Star Wars novels that are coming out. Some of them are amazing, don't get me wrong, but it seems like they're so afraid to give too much away about the next big movie, or in this case, it feels like they're too afraid to give much away about the next expansion. But they still want a novel length book on the market, and so that's my single biggest gripe with this book is like I felt like I read Sylvanas's rules for meeting your loved ones four separate times. And like I was just reading the same thing over and over to the point where I was in the head of the Desolate Council member where I'm just like, yes, I get it. I understand the rules. Shut up. Like, move on. And the same thing with Anduin. Like, we get the same inner monologue of Anduin over and over again in the middle part of this book, and it just drags.
I agree. It was a little bit too thin. But we did get some really cool moments, like the Netherlight Temple. I guess you go there when you're a priest, maybe even... Is that your
It's the Order Hall.
Class hole?
Yeah, it's the Order Hall for priests.
Okay.
It's rad if you haven't gone. If you've got a...
I should go. I do have a priest. Maybe I did go, but I don't really remember that it was that, because I did like five different... initial, you know, the beginning of the class order hole quests in a row. But so we do that, and then we have Kalia Menethil, whom we meet. Did we know she existed, or is
that
semi-retconned?
If you played a priest, she shows up very, very early on in the class hall campaign when you meet with Foul. So it's kind of revealed that Foul is alive but a Forsaken, and that he has been working with Kalia Menethil, who is alive and still a human, and nothing bad really ever happened to her. And so this is if you're listening to this and you haven't read the book and you don't care and you listen to it because you just want to find out what happened, Kalia Menethil is the sister of Arthas.
But did she exist before Legion, or did they just say that she had, that Arthas had a sister when Legion started?
No, it's always been canon that Arthas had a sister. It's just it was assumed that she perished in the Scourge's like siege of Lordaeron.
Of course. Right.
But so what is a bit retconny, although since they never really did anything with their death, it's kind of up to them to make it whatever they want, right? So
she's just not dead, and she's a priest, and she is hanging out in the Netherlight Temple, and she's having fun with Thald and everyone else. And then, I mean, what she does during that thing, like thinking, oh, this is my destiny, I have to get people to to defect, essentially. How did she think it was a good idea? That she even Golden even writes it in at some point. She's like, "Oh shit, why did I do that?" She's thinking to herself, "I was taken by the illusion of something, and that was really dumb," or something to that effect.
Yeah, I more or less bought it. Like, I think that's where, to me, where this book goes it gets good, which sadly isn't like the last 30 pages, but like when Kalia makes that decision to try and, I guess, save the Desolate Council in her eyes and bring them into the Alliance and whatnot. Right. Like, I remember reading it and when it dawned on me, and I was just like, well, I'm a slow reader. I guess I'm going to be up till 1 a.m. because it finally becomes a page turner at that point, because you're like, oh, yeah. Shit. Sylvanas knows who that
now
is.
It's happening.
She has dealt with a coup but once before. Like, she's got this. Nothing good will come of this.
Yeah.
And
no, I understand her reasoning, her thought process. I just think it's a dumb thought process, but I understand why she goes through that. But so then she dies, killed in a very dramatic fashion by Sylvanas, and she delights in the inflicting of suffering, which, again, I understand, Dark Lady, all of this, but it just makes it difficult to get behind her.
Yeah, and that's where,
in a way that it wasn't before.
That's where I think Inner Monologue would have really helped. The big question is did she legitimately think that this was a usurper challenging her, or did she just see this as a convenient way to kill the members of the Desolate Council and be justified in her actions?
Well, I mean, she clearly, she says, holy poop, not in those words, but holy poop, Kalia Menethil is alive. She has a claim to the throne of Lordaeron. And essentially, my people are her people, except they're a little bit undead. She is a rival, and I have to get rid of her. I mean, she doesn't say I have to get rid of her, but when she kills her, you understand that, you know, maybe that's a good idea anyway.
It's a win-win. Kalia dies,
and then by some kind of magical miracle, but that's fine. Foul and is it just him and Anduin? Doesn't matter. A bunch of priests.
Yeah, it's Anaru. It's Anduin. But the big thing is that the book explains it as a mix, like a combination of the light and void, resurrecting Kalia Menethil.
Right, and she is resurrected not as an undead, but they say basically she's raised by the light and not by undeath, which we don't know exactly how it changes. I guess she's just going to be, her skin is going to be perfect, and she's going to have some kind of light aura instead of decomposing flesh, I suppose.
Maybe it's
but not, her heart doesn't beat. She's not like, she's not alive. She's undead. I really liked the fact that they brought her back, because she was a really interesting character and it's a great piece of WoW history. When Sylvanas killed her, I was disappointed that they would get rid of that character in the same way that I was disappointed they got rid of the Desolate Council. I thought, you know, I understand story-wise it makes sense and it builds tension and the arc is interesting. But Kalia was really looking forward to play, to meet in the game, you know? And when she died, I was like, oh, well, okay, I guess we're not going to get to meet her. But now, actually, we are. And that is a great way of, you know, getting the novel to provide a story and content for the expansion.
Yeah, yeah. And it leads to it makes the sieging of Lordaeron a lot more interesting, have a lot more stakes.
Yes. Or,
like, there's a big part of that now. So, like, we're assuming they're successful because we know that the maps are divided, right? We know that the Eastern Kingdoms belong entirely to Alliance after the starting events of Battle for Azeroth, and that Kalimdor and the western portion of Azeroth belongs entirely to the Horde. So we're assuming they're successful, right? Which means I am assuming Kalia is reinstated, like, to the throne of Lordaeron. Which
I'm guessing,
if that happens, like, oh, that'd be so cool. They're like a Menethil sitting on a throne again, and also having two kingdoms of men, like humans.
And you know, she's gonna, I mean, I don't know that every undead is going to leave. the Undercity, maybe some of them are going to stay. Maybe they are, because they are citizens of Lordaeron, and as Sylvanas feared, Kalia is a legitimate heir to the throne. Maybe they're all going to go, and she is going to rule over, you know, the remaining citizens of Lordaeron who took refuge in Stormwind, for example. But she is undead. She could be like the Bright Lady, like, you know, Sylvanas is the Dark Lady. That sounds very much like the Lord of the Rings with the Dark Lord and the Bright Lord in Shadow of Mordor. Anyway.
Yeah, but it's also Warcraft. It's pretty pulpy at times.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, obviously. But yeah, it is very interesting, especially since now we've known for a few months that Lordaeron was going to go back to the Alliance. But until then, and even after, it felt like Lordaeron was lost. That was it. You know, it was the Undercity. It was undead. It was not going to come back. And these kinds of maps and story alterations, we haven't really gotten used to it. We've had added content. We've had added even, you know, the capital cities for the Blood Elves and Gold People and Draenei were added. This is like literally altering the landscape. I guess the Cataclysm did that as well, but like you see what I mean. It's removing a capital city and replacing it with something else. I'm also very curious to see what's going to be in its place. Is it going to be Kalia Menethil's kingdom now, or queendom?
Yeah, that's what I want to see as well. And will there be defecting Forsaken to the Alliance? Like, is there going to be an Alliance Forsaken allied race? Is that possible? Because we have the Blood Elf model as Void Elves.
I guess that could be possible. I was going to say no. I guess they're Void Elves. They're kind of Blood Elves.
They're straight up. Like, they're just the Blood Elves are High Elves. Like, it all stemmed from High Elves, right? So it's right. The High Elf model, which is a Blood Elf, which is also a Void Elf, because that's also what Illyria is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's literally the sister of Sylvanas. We're already.
No, I guess maybe
we're already mixing that, it, and while I think they went to greater lengths to differentiate the models, the Nightfallen are just the Night Elf model. They've just elongated them a little more. The animations are exactly the same. Yes.
Oh right, it's the same rig, but the model is very different.
The model is minorly different. They're just a little bit stretched, because they're a little taller and more like gangly.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, so that's a big question, as well. I don't know, but I'm very glad that we're getting, you know, it is cheesy and it's like, oh, Menethil that isn't dead and it's calling back to Arthas again. Yes, of course, I understand, but those are the characters we love. And, I'm really glad we're getting that. At some point, I almost thought that there might be romance brewing between Kalia and Anduin.
You're not
alone.
She's
twice his age, but
she is twice his age, and that didn't stop Star Wars. But
wait, which?
Well, between freaking like Padme and Anakin in the prequels, like the age gap is so much that Phantom Menace you see a boy with a grown ass woman, and then next movie suddenly they have a romance. You're just like, wait a minute, this is creepy.
Well, I mean, he's 18. It's fine.
The European.
It doesn't seem like it's going to be going forward. Maybe it is. But by the way, I really liked the and it infuriated me as well. The subplot of Anduin needs an heir. And he needs to, at the very least, designate someone to take his place if something happens. And the way Gen says, dude, I don't want to have to deal with a nobility dispute. If you die, sure, I'll be in charge for a little bit. That's fine. But what happens afterwards? Every noble of Stormwind is going to show up and lay a claim to the throne. That would be a horrible situation. We need to do something about this. Designate someone. And he's like, oh, I can't think about it. I don't want. And I really wanted to slap him at that point. I understand why, but that was infuriating.
Yeah, yeah, to a certain degree, but I don't know. It's right. It's just that, again, I was like, let's move on. I don't really care about this.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it was that part was, it was well written. And the if anything, like, I think a lot of my, like, pushback to this book obviously comes from my own kind of desires and wants for the story of Warcraft. And, like, because I came out of this book being like, man, Greymane had a cool arc. And that also makes me mad. Because... like at the end of the day, I could be like, yeah, Sylvanas like is kind of evil. Yeah, Sylvanas is kind of evil, but at least Greymane is basically like a dog Nazi. But they took that away from me at the end of this. Even Greymane is like, even I am a somewhat relatable character that you can feel sympathy for, but not Sylvanas.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, I think ultimately the takeaway from this book. There's good and bad. I would say was much less enjoyable than Illidan was, but because Illidan is such a great character and the, you know, demon hunters have a very compelling ethos, it was enjoyable. But the takeaway is definitely that there's something wrong with Sylvanas, and whether or not they will not even fix it, but whether or not it will serve a purpose for her story in the expansion remains to be seen, and I think will determine whether or not it was justified to write her like this in this book.
Yeah, I agree. So it's like, it's so my biggest concern, which is, are we doing the Horde leader is the big bad again? That's still my big concern, and it has not been quelled by this book. If anything, I'm more concerned after than I was before.
Yeah, I mean, but it's if. This was the first time I could have said, oh, yeah, that would be possible. But they can't make you fight a war chief again. Like that, there would be outrage, pikes and forks in the streets.
I hope so. I really do hope so. Oh, and one last thing is, like, and this gets in the order hall. So, and it sounds like from your questions about, was Callio around? Do we know Fowl was around? That I'm assuming you didn't like just spoil the other Order Halls for yourself that you didn't play through.
Which ones?
Did you play through the Rogue Order Hall campaign?
I did not. I don't have a Rogue.
Okay. All right. So my other thing that kind of annoyed me during this, and again, this is less a thing about, I think, Chrissy Golden than it is like whatever orders are coming from on high about like what the story is going to be. But, like in the Rogue Order Hall campaign, it's revealed that Shaw, the head of SI7 for the Alliance, was kidnapped and replaced with a Dreadlord that impersonated him and lured everyone into the trap of attacking the Broken Shore, which is, you know, where Varian ends up dying.
Really?
Yes. Like, that is a bombshell that is dropped in the Rogue questline. So does nobody on the Alliance know this? Did Shaw, who is now back to actual Shaw again, not be like, oh, hey, guys, by the way, I was Dreadlord. Yeah, you really shouldn't attack Broken Shore. Yeah, it's not the Horde's fault. We were all led into a trap. They've got to know that. There's no way Shaw hasn't told Anduin that. So how is Anduin and Greymane still having these debates about whether it was the Horde's fault or not?
Why did no one say this ever? This is the first I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's a huge bomb drop. And frankly, I had forgotten about this. Like, we covered, like, when I was doing For Azeroth with Jocelyn, we covered this because we did class order hall spoilers for every class order hall. And right. I forgot. Like, it was so long ago now that I didn't even remember this. And then my raid leader Siv is like, hey, dude, did you forget about the whole Shaw thing? Because it feels like it should have come up on the last episode. I'm like, holy crap, I completely did.
But that's, yeah, no, but you're right. This completely changes the way you look at the Broken Shore. It kind of fixes everything.
It's the out. It's like, no one's at fault. Like, this is straight up, this was the Legion manipulating. The Legion's
doing, and they engineered it to be like this.
Yeah.
This is, I agree. This is a massive, I mean, every rogue knows this if it's through the Rogue campaign.
Right.
Every rogue in the Alliance
and Horde
knows that this is what happens, or at least a couple, and it would seem like a super high-ranking member of the rogue class who is well-regarded by the entire faction would find time to go tell Anduin.
It doesn't even need to be that
rope.
By
the way,
Shaw
your
is
dad,
back.
Who said, is that's why.
Yeah, so that's the other thing is I'm really annoyed that they seem to remember and not remember that at convenient points. Like,
yeah.
Like this whole book basically plays out like they didn't know Shaw was a dreadlord at one point.
So when did he become not a dreadlord?
Oh, don't ask me that. Ask that. That's my specific timeline questions. Okay. I do not know. I didn't.
No, but him. I mean, so the rogues save him or something.
I believe it's part of the Class Order Hall campaign, but I do not want. Don't quote me on that. I'm sure rogue players will let us know.
I'm sure they will. Yeah. But yeah. So anyway, overall, enjoyable book. Some qualms, but. I'm curious to see how it, how what happens in the expansion is going to justify or not what happens in the book.
Yeah. Me too. It's when I look at the broad strokes of this book, it's great. It's a pretty damn cool place to leave the state of Azeroth, like politically. It was just that, like I said, the dragging in the middle was just the act of reading it actively was not the best.
You should have listened to it on Audible. It was really good. The accents were good. The reading was, you know, the narration was really good. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but it's the voice actor that does Anduin. Was a guy that they tapped for that. I've heard it's amazing. I this is just like a personal off topic thing. I really like reading paper books because it helps me go to sleep. I'm not looking at a screen. I don't have stuff going on in my ears. Like I turn everything off except a reading light and. Yeah, actually,
fair enough. Okay, that's acceptable.
Pile through some dead trees. But yeah, anyways, hope you enjoyed this discussion, everybody. And in case you're, after last week, which was like a half measure, especially since I was only about halfway through the book, I was like, oh yes, I'm done. We should do a spoiler chat. Oh, there's the instance is getting pushed. I'm gonna poke Patrick and see if we can make this happen. So, thanks for doing this last minute with
me,
Garrett. Oh, I'll poke you anytime, Patrick. Anytime. It's just I poke him in the scarf, you know, just it's got some padding.
That's what happens.
Well, all right, everybody, a new instance episode should be coming out relatively soon. I'm not sure where Scott is putting this, so hope you enjoyed it. Good luck and have fun, everyone.
Bye.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.